My guest at this time is South Carolina Republican Congressman Mick Mulvaney. He represents the Palmetto State's 5th Congressional District, and he's a member of the House Budget Committee. He joined us many times throughout the debate that ultimately ended up in the Budget Control Act of 2011, better known as the deal that ended the threat of the debt ceiling back in the summer of 2011. That spawned the super committee, which failed and spawned sequestration, which is now set to kick in here on March 1st. And Congressman, thanks so much for joining us to talk about this a little bit more.
Greg, thanks for having me. And that may be the best short summary of the background on this that I've heard in a long time. So congratulations.
Well, thanks. Glad we can summarize it that way. And our listeners who are regular know that you were opposed to the deal back in 2011. You supported cut, cap, and balance. But now that we're facing this, are you at all surprised that we're here? And what do you make of the back and forth about who's to blame and what we can do about it potentially in the next week or so?
But yeah, you know, a bunch of us voted against the debt ceiling deal for various different reasons. But, you know, one of the things that we were part of the original debt ceiling agreement was, and a basic central part of it, was that we would raise the debt ceiling a dollar, and for each dollar we did that, we would also cut spending by a dollar. So the debt would go up by a dollar, and spending would come down by a dollar. That was a core part of the law. Now, the sequester backing that up was the president's idea. It was accepted by both houses, the Senate and the House. So that's the fundamental agreement. That is the promise that we made to folks back in August. If we raise the debt ceiling a dollar, we'll cut spending a dollar, and if we can't figure out how to do it, then the sequester will force us to do it. That is why we are here. I happen to think that agreement is worth keeping. We have to have at least some consistency. I didn't agree with the bill at the time, for various different reasons, but we have to stick to the principles, and I don't understand why the president now wants to break the agreement. It's imperative that we prove to people that we can reduce spending, and that right now the only way to do that is through the sequester.
And so what will be the immediate impact? We hear a lot about defense spending, more on the Republican side. The president yesterday talking about first responders, teachers, flight delays, you name it, could be impacted by this. So what will be the practical impact here?
Yeah, and one of the reasons I didn't like the deal in the first place was its disproportionate impact on military spending. And, of course, I'm one of the folks who believes that we should be looking at the Defense Department for ways to save money, but an 11% across-the-board cut is not the right way to do it. So I am concerned about the impact on the military, about the impact on its ability to perform its missions that we want it to perform. And I would rather see us pass a replacement bill similar to what the House has done already twice, as we've offered different alternatives to this particular pattern of reduction. Now, that being said, if you turn to the non-defense items, which are the other parts of the spending reduction, keep in mind, Greg, we're only taking this back to, in some cases, higher than 2008 levels. I recognize that there's some fear-mongering going on. I recognize there's a lot of media hype about how planes are going to crash into each other because there's no FAA air traffic controllers and there's long lines at airports because there's no TSA folks. But look, the government was able to function, as I recall, in 2008. That's all we're asking it to do, is go back to 2008, sometimes even higher than 2008 levels. And I think that a lot of these discussions about how the government's going to effectively shut down or not be able to run is hyperbole and hype. And I think one of the things the Democrats are really most afraid of is that the sequester comes in and everybody wakes up the next day and the world is still here. So this is a serious matter. We need to deal with it seriously. And I think, you know, trying to frighten people is not the right way to do it.
You mentioned the goal of the sequester as the last option from the Budget Control Act was to provide $1 for spending cuts for every additional dollar of spending that was needed at the time. When you factor this in, let's say this goes forward on March 1st, how noticeable of a dent will this make in the deficit?
Hardly any. Let's see, the debt this year will be, I want to say, $1,300 billion, and this would cut it by 85. So you're cutting $85 out of $1,300.
Wow.
Think about that for a second. So yeah, that's why, you know, that's why I think a lot of this doom and gloom and sky is falling hyperbole that we're hearing from the Democrats is just designed to make people afraid. And I think this is a good time to ride it out, show folks that the world doesn't end when you cut 2% from certain items in the federal government. We do, again, I don't want to minimize the impact on defense, but it's 11%, which is different. But the sun is going to rise on March 1st. The federal government will still be there, and we'll save $85 billion. And I think, all things being considered, that's something we need to do.
If there's all this back and forth and political rhetoric over $85 billion, how much confidence do you have that the huge numbers here, pushing $17 trillion in debt, can realistically be addressed soon?
And that's it. This is a gut check. That's what this is. This is a test as to whether or not we can actually make even small steps towards balancing the budget. I have members of my own party who are concerned about job losses and impacts and so forth. And I understand where they're coming from. But this is a 2% reduction in some circumstances. If we cannot do that, then do we really have a chance? And I think that, to ever balance the budget, and I think that's exactly what this comes down to. This is a test case. If we do not have the political will to do this, then we might as well give up and go home, because I would think that it's unlikely we'll ever get real reductions in our spending.
A couple quick follow-ups. First of all, you said you're worried about the 11% cut in defense spending. How will that look? What kind of things could we be dealing with as a result of that?
Well, it depends. And again, there is some discretion, not as much as I'd like to see, within the Defense Department. You're hearing reports today that maybe civilian contractors will be furloughed one day a week for a couple of months or several months. It could take the form of reduced training, could take the form of reduced maintenance. I am concerned about it. It does lead to what Senator Lindsey Graham, I think, accurately called a hollowed-out military, which is a military that looks the same from the outside, but doesn't have the same guts on the inside to it. And I think that is a risk that we run, and I don't like it. I honestly don't. Again, as interested as I have been in looking critically at the Defense Department for savings, an 11% across-the-board cut is not the right way to manage the Defense Department. So I am concerned about it. I'm concerned about our ability to pursue our interests overseas, especially militarily, and that is a real concern. That being said, the House has already offered its alternative to prevent that, and the Senate has refused to take it up. The President has refused to engage on the topic. I don't know what else we can do in the House. We can't govern by ourselves. So it is a difficulty. We need to face it, but I think getting rid of the sequester is not the answer.
What do you make of the PR battle? The president saying this is obviously the fault of congressional Republicans. Congressional Republicans, as you just pointed out, saying we've passed alternatives to this, and oh, by the way, this was the president's idea. Is there an important PR battle to be waged here, or do you think the American people are just likely to throw up their hands at both sides?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, there's always PR battles, obviously, and the American public are, always liable to throw their hands up and say that, Congress can't do anything. It's easy to say that. It's easy to hate an institution. I saw today that I think even in my home state, our approval ratings as an institution are about 14%. But we all know that that's neither here nor there. I am more comfortable about, laying this at the feet of the president, because no one less than Bob Woodward has actually confirmed that it was his idea. The gentleman who wrote the book on the original debt ceiling crisis confirms that, in his speaking to the president, all the folks who were involved in it made it very clear the sequester was the president's idea. And again, I don't care whose idea it was. I care who's giving us good ideas on how to fix it. And right now the House has done that. The Republicans have done that. They have given an alternative. The Senate Democrats have thrown a couple ideas out there, but don't have the nerve to take a vote. The president hasn't even thrown any specific ideas out there. He's still talking about, fair and balanced approach and making rich people pay more. That's not a plan. That's a platform. That's a plank in a campaign effort. So the Republicans in the House, yes, we have a PR effort. Do we have a solid message? Yes, which is that we're being adults. We are serious about the spending problem. We are going to keep the promises made during the debt ceiling discussions, which is $1 of debt increase leads to $1 of spending reductions, and we are going to offer as many alternatives as we can. How do we do that in a responsible fashion? I'm proud of the work that the House Republicans have done this time around, and at the end of the day, Greg, you have to believe that good policy makes good politics, and right now we are on the right side of this policy.
How soon till we get to the debt ceiling?
I think debt ceiling is May 19th is when we come up to that again.
And so let the stage be set for that in the wake of this. We'll see how it plays out in the next several days here. Congressman, it's always great to have you with us. Thank you so much for sharing your insights with us.
Hey, Greg, and don't forget, between now and the debt ceiling, you've got the Ryan budget and a government shutdown, so it's going to be a fun springtime in Washington. I look forward to talking to you again.
Excellent. Look forward to having you back, sir. South Carolina Republican Congressman Mick Mulvaney represents his state's 5th Congressional District, member of the House Budget Committee. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.